WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Marlboro, Winston, Salem, and Kent have become familiar names throughout Asia. You can see their logos on billboards, in magazine ads, on blue jeans, and travel bags. My guest Stan Sesser writes about Asia for The New Yorker. In the current edition, he reports on how American tobacco companies are opening new markets in Asia as they face increasing restrictions on smoking in the U.S. In just 1 week, Sesser attended a Virginia Slims fashion show at a Taiwanese disco, watched the finals of the Salem Open tennis tournament in Hong Kong, and followed the Marlboro cycle tour in the Philippines. In Shanghai, he heard the Marlboro theme on the radio.
I was introduced to the Marlboro ad campaign by a professor of medicine at the Shanghai medical faculty, and we were sitting in a dining room eating with other medical professors, and she had a battered old transistor radio on the table. And it was an hour of Elvis Presley music in the middle of Shanghai. It was called the American Music Hour and sponsored by Marlboro Cigarettes. And after about every two Elvis Presley songs, the music stopped. And then there was this theme song from The Magnificent Seven, which is the Marlboro theme song. And then a voice in Chinese describing these cowboys. And you heard cows mooing and horses and everything. It sounded very, very out of place in Shanghai, which is the idea. The cowboy image has proved fabulously successful in Asia. And the fact that this came about, despite the fact that advertising of cigarettes is not allowed on the media in China, got these professors really outraged, and that's why they wanted me to hear it.
So foreign cigarettes aren't permitted to be sold in China except to foreigners. And even to foreigners, foreign cigarettes are only sold in hotels, airports, and government-run friendship stores. So how does Marlboro get around this?
Well, first of all, lots of foreign cigarettes are available in China. It's just on the black market. They have these wicker baskets on virtually every street corner that are overturned. And on the top of the basket, there's a crushed cigarette carton. And that's the sign that you're supposed to ask about cigarettes. And then you say, I want Marlboro cigarettes. I mean, you say it in Chinese, and the guy scurries off and gets the Marlboro cigarettes, which are hidden somewhere else. So if the authorities come up, there's nothing under the basket, and you buy the Marlboro cigarettes for Chinese currency. Now, Philip Morris is not happy about this arrangement. They'd make a lot more money selling them directly, but as it happens, a lot of people in China smoke Marlboros, and you can get them any place, but just on the black market. It's part of the whole authority of the central government collapsing in China. And I understand that since I was in China in May, that starting this summer, the black market has actually moved into stores. You can now just walk into a retail shop and buy illegal Marlboro cigarettes. You don't even have to go through the subterfuge of the wicker basket.
So have you found a direct correlation between the limitations put on cigarette advertising in the United States and the drop-off in smoking in the United States because of health concerns? Have you found a correlation between that and the inroads the American tobacco companies are trying to make in other countries?
Well, there's no question when you read tobacco trade publications, there's no question that the industry is moving to Asia to gain back what they are losing in the United States. And they're doing it with amazing success. In with the aid of the U.S. government, they've already gotten into Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, and Thailand. And sales of American cigarettes are soaring. If you read Philip Morris's annual report, you see that their international sales far outweigh any drop-off. They've just expanded by 50% the capacity of their cigarette plant in North Carolina because they can't keep up with the demand in Asia. So when we think of the lives that are being saved in the United States from people who quit smoking or who don't take it up, who would have in previous years, for every life saved in the United States, tens or perhaps hundreds of lives are going to be lost in Asia.
Do people in Asia not know about the research correlating cigarettes and lung cancer and other health problems?
It goes back almost to what I remember from the United States, say, in the 1960s when the Surgeon General's report first came out. And some people are paying attention, but that's people who read and people who are concerned about their health and whatever, and it's just a small segment of society, and it takes decades for the consciousness to really pervade the society. Even in the United States, you know, that consciousness has still not pervaded many minority groups, and cigarette companies are turning their attention now to blacks and Hispanics, and while smoking rates are dropping, smoking rates among black women, for instance, are increasing. It takes a long, long time, and you know, the societies in Asia are not nearly as educated as those in the United States. And fortunately, unfortunately for their health, but fortunately for other things, Asian societies are becoming wealthier. And now, you know, those hundreds of millions of peasants who could not participate previously in a market economy now have enough money to buy cigarettes.
In some Asian countries, it was really basically men who smoke, not women. But you say that the American tobacco companies are trying to open up the female market.
Yeah, I went to a fashion show, a Virginia Slims fashion show in a disco in Taipei. And it's very unusual in many Chinese societies to see women smoke. But when you get to the upper crust of the relatively westernized Taipei society, you see Chinese women smoking all over the place. You know, there's no particular reason that women aren't supposed to smoke in Asia, except it's never been done. And just the suggestion that they can be fashionable like all those fashionable Westerners merely by lighting up a cigarette is proving a tremendous lure for women.
My guest is Stan Sesser, and we're discussing his article that appears in the current issue of The New Yorker magazine. The article's called Opium War Redux. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Stan Sesser is my guest, and we're talking about the subject of his current New Yorker magazine article on the inroads the American tobacco industry has made in Asia. You say that American cigarette companies have gotten help from the American government in opening up Asian markets. What has the American government done to help the tobacco companies?
Well, the American government, it's very interesting that for instance, not a grain of American rice can be sold today in Taiwan or Japan, which would be tremendous markets for the American rice industry. But American cigarettes can be sold, and that's because the tobacco lobby in Washington is so powerful. And the Reagan and Bush administrations pushed very hard and really played hardball with these countries. To get cigarettes into Japan and Taiwan and South Korea and Thailand, they threatened massive trade retaliation. You do this or else. And then not only the American government, and this is the U.S. Trade Representative, who handles the negotiation. That's the federal agency. The American government not only insisted that these countries open their market to American cigarettes, but they insisted that these countries drop all advertising and health restrictions so that American cigarettes could compete on an equal footing. For instance, Taiwan did not allow advertising of cigarettes. And when the U.S. bludgeoned Taiwan into admitting American cigarettes in 1986, Taiwan was also forced to allow cigarette advertising so that the American cigarettes could establish a market. And then the U.S. Trade Representative maintained total vigilance over any attempt by the Asian governments to impose health regulations. And for instance, in 1990, when Taiwan wanted to, they had a tiny little health warning on the side of their pack, and they wanted to move it into the front of the pack and enlarge the type, the U.S. government formally protested, claiming that they had no right under the 1960-86 agreement to move the warning to the front of the pack, and that that would discourage the sale of American cigarettes. The warning, of course, applied to all cigarettes, Taiwanese as well as American. And they had to have long negotiations, and finally the U.S. government let them move the warning to the front of the pack, but they weren't allowed to enlarge the type. At the same time that the government is trying to discourage smoking in the United States, the Reagan and Bush administrations were forcing Asian governments to not implement health regulations.
What was the motivation of the Reagan and Bush administrations in working so hard to help American tobacco companies open up new markets in Asia?
Well, I found a really interesting symbolic thing when I investigated that, which is there's a room very near to the Secretary of State's office on the seventh floor of the State Department building called the Treaty Room, where treaties, formal treaties, are signed and where visitors are greeted and foreign dignitaries are greeted in very formal ceremonies. And in the late 80s, that room was renovated, and the tobacco industry paid the entire cost of renovating that room. And on the columns of the room are motifs of tobacco leaves. This is just symbolic of the integration of the tobacco lobby into United States politics. The Southern senators, the tobacco lobbyists in Washington, Michael Deaver, when he left the Reagan administration, became a tobacco lobbyist. The tremendous power of the industry, and the industry decided it was too hot politically to be as blatant as they had been before pushing things in the United States, although I don't know, they're still pretty blatant. But they decided to use the American government to bludgeon their way into Asia. And they gave the orders, and the American government wagged its tail.
The new trade representative in the Clinton administration is Mickey Cantor. Will he have big decisions awaiting him and the issue of American tobacco overseas?
The best thing that happened was in terms of tobacco, in terms of anti-smoking forces, is Mickey Cantor's appointment. Because Mickey Cantor, as a lawyer in Los Angeles, was a tobacco industry lawyer. I mean, he represented a lot of tobacco industry clients. And he fought to overturn, for instance, the ordinance in Beverly Hills that banned smoking in restaurants. And did some pretty outrageous things. But Mickey Cantor is also a very smart person, and I don't think he personally favors smoking. And I think he recognizes that he could drag the Clinton administration, which after all banned smoking in the White House and is going to impose a big tax on cigarettes in the United States, he could drag them into scandal by continuing to do the bidding of the tobacco industry. So Mickey Cantor told me that there are going to be changes, and one of the first changes is that the Clinton administration will no longer bar Asian countries from enacting health regulations. It's very generous of them. Taiwan is now free to put the cigarette warning at any size type it wants.
The World Health Organization is concerned about the growth of smoking in Asia. What do they have to say about it?
When you look at the World Health Organization report, it's almost inconceivable. I mean, the reason that this really hasn't been written about is that the statistics just it gets to the realm where you can't believe these figures. The World Health Organization looked at the growth of cigarette smoking in developing nations, most of them in Asia, and they concluded the mortality, the deaths from cigarette smoking follows the increase in smoking rates by 20, 30, 40 years as people develop cancer and other diseases. And the World Health Organization projected this into the next century, and they concluded that there would be an epidemic that would take more lives than every previous epidemic in world history combined. The number of people whose lives would prematurely end from cigarette-induced deaths would exceed the death from every epidemic in world history combined.
Have you ever been a smoker?
Never. Cigarettes have always been repugnant to me, and I've written about the subject before in other ways, but I've never seen anything as scandalous as what's going on in Asia today. And we feel pretty smug sitting in the United States and watching city after city enact anti-smoking regulations, barring smoking in restaurants and whatever. And we feel pretty smug that something's being done about the problem. And yet, as I said, for every American life saved, tens or maybe hundreds of Asian lives will be lost.
Stan Susser, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. It's a pleasure.
Stan Susser writes about American cigarette companies in Asia in the current edition of The New Yorker. This is Fresh Air.